And good morning. Welcome to Community Watch and Comment, the Wednesday edition. I'm your host, David Whetstone, here at 89.3 FM, your Jazz and Justice Radio, WPFW, celebrating 40-plus. Heroic, leading the fight for justice. Women. Our guest this morning is Emily Witten. She's ComicMix.com columnist and reporter. She's been a program moderator of Awesome Con. By the way, Awesome Con is meeting in Washington, D.C. this weekend, the 16th to the 18th. And Ms. Witten, without further ado, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So we're going to talk about how the presence of women has been represented, displayed, and honored in the world of comics, graphic novels, movies, and media in general. And it's always been contested territory, somewhat difficult, but progress has been made.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where we start, but why don't we start with something that's very present with us? We both saw the Wonder Woman movie to begin with.
Yes.
Wonder Woman's 75 years old.
Can you believe it?
Yes. Yes, indeed. And rightly immortal, rightly continuing the fight.
Mm-hmm.
What should we understand about Wonder Woman?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about the movie, one of the things that I really took away from it was perspective. And an interesting thing that I noticed while I was watching, and particularly afterwards when I was cogitating about it, is that Wonder Woman, Diana, being raised in a society that did not put limitations on her of the sort that women are used to in our society or have had to contend with in history, had a completely different perspective on what she was capable of than women in the society that she found herself in with Steve Trevor and Etta. I love Etta. And what really interested me is that any of the messages she was putting forward about why can't we do this, I don't understand why you're saying this is not possible, are just as valid in our world as they were in hers. The difference is that women and little girls in our world are told they can't do those things until they internalize them. If they didn't have that perspective, it would be very interesting to see what women would be able to do, not having the media, other people, their own self-doubts tell them that they can't do XYZ. Maybe we'd all be Amazons.
Indeed. But you know, that on this last point, you're just saying that maybe we'd all be Amazons. It does seem as the characters last for 75 years, many women of many different backgrounds have identified with Wonder Woman. You see the meme of Wonder Woman rendered as a woman of color, welcome as Rosie the Riveter, rendered as a legislator, rendered in all sorts of different ways and forms. And
I think it's really interesting that you can look at Wonder Woman and sure, she comes from that particular background. She's from the island. She's, you know, been raised as an Amazon. But one of the things that she is that she is purely herself. So she is not a person who's sitting back. I mean, sure, when she's younger and her mom is telling her, you know, you can't fight and everything, if we're looking at least the movie history of it, you know, she's getting into that point. But as an adult and even as a child, she's still tries to be what she wants to be. And I think that that is something that women identify with, and particularly women who have been underserved and who have been put down, because nobody appreciates that, and it's not necessary, nor is it helpful to our society.
On that point, too, being oneself and having the guidance of a good mentors, fellow and older women, elders, she makes a stand for peace that's not very uncharacteristic of the early start of comic book characters. The same stands for peace and logic were reflected in the character Superman. And listeners, I should say that, and all due respect to the Man of Steel, there's a way that Wonder Woman kind of predates his appearance, by the way. Maybe we should even talk about a little bit more about, we saw it in the movie, it's very apparent, how she was trusting kind of ancient Athenian wisdom, all sorts of pulses for pacifism. And she was really hopeful of entering a world, in this case in the movie, during World War I, where she was very, very hopeful that men would see the better nature, or mankind, or humankind would see the better nature in one another and try to negotiate peace.
I think that was a really interesting point in the film. In the beginning, I don't think there's anything wrong with being hopeful for people to be their best selves. I think that's a really important message, that she wasn't, you know, dinged, so to speak, for that. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that, you know, to see the larger picture, she also had to realize that people were not one-dimensional, one-sided characters, you know, in some story. They weren't the legend that her mother told her. But the thing that I love about Wonder Woman is that she chooses love after realizing that people are good, bad mixes in between. So it's, at first she is more, you could say, naive about the depths of humanity, but as she learns, she still makes the choice to solve things not through violence and not through hate. So I think that's very interesting, and I think it does echo Superman. I mean, he's, you know, another all-powerful being, and he could lord it over everyone, just as Wonder Woman could choose to with Ares, but instead they choose to recognize dimensions and the value in having diverse humanity.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Community Watch and Comment, the Wednesday edition. I'm your host, David Whetstone. In our studio is our guest, Emily Witten. Ms. Witten is a columnist and reporter for ComicMix.com. And she's been a program moderator of AwesomeCon, which is AwesomeCon.com, excuse me, which is the big social media comic book convention that's going on this weekend here in Washington, D.C. But Emily Witten's also going to be a moderator at an important event tonight at the National Museum of Women in the Arts. That's part of their series called A Fresh Talk, and it's entitled Who Are the New Superwomen of the Universe? And the panelists include Carolyn Kakoa, Ariel Johnson, Gabby Rivera, Ashley Woods, and each of these women respectively have either written about comics and graphic media, or in the case of Miss Johnson, she's running a comic book and graphic novels store in Philadelphia. Gabby Rivera, besides being a young adult author, is also Marvel's series writer for America Cruise, and Ashley Woods is an illustrator, graphic artist, and writer of a graphic novel called Niobe. And I'm sure that panel's going to offer a lot. What do you hope to discuss tonight?
Oh, I'm really looking forward to talking with everyone. They are amazing women, talented and knowledgeable about their subjects, as well as active in the community from everything I know. Not having yet met them, I'm really looking forward to meeting them and talking with them on stage, but getting everyone's different perspectives, because each of these women, you know, we've got a professor who's written a whole book about the history of this. We've got a writer who's come from the YA world into the comics world. We've got an artist who's been in the industry for 12 years. Now, at least, and we've got I'm sorry, I'm blanking on all of my.
Yeah, you covered Carolyn Kakoa,
yes, we've got our wonderful comic book shop owner, who's the
Ariel Johnson,
only black woman comic book shop owner on the entire East Coast. How could I possibly blank for a moment on that? Mm-hmm. I'm really interested in talking with her as well. I've had some interesting experiences in comic book shops over the years, ranging from bad to good, more good than bad, fortunately. So I'm really interested to hear her perspective on starting up a shop like that.
Okay. And listeners, you might sense that we're a little distracted. For some reason, somewhere in our building, there's construction going on, and the sounds are coming right into the studio. Forgive us. So Emily, we'll keep going here. So we mentioned, so we tried to do a roundup of your panel, and we wanted to say that with each of these women, they represent a certain stakeholder position in the industry. As I said earlier, both in terms of fandom and creator, women have had to fight for their place in the comic book and graphic art world. Mm-hmm. You know, one owns a store, one's a historian, another is an entire creator, not only of illustrations and writing, but just the whole package of things. We're of different generations, and I'm sure our listeners reflect different generations. You've been following the comic book world for how long?
Well, I mean, so I'm a child of the 80s, you know, I was born in 81, so that puts me in that perspective of where I came into things. The comics, the cartoons were a big part of my childhood, but even before that, the Christopher Reeve Superman was one of the first things I saw, and my dad used to watch Lone Ranger and Green Hornet and all of those on TV, so I grew up, and the Green Hornet radio show, so I grew up with those, and then the X-Men cartoon and the Batman animated series and the Spider-Man cartoon. So I came into it from that, and also my sister owning a few actual paper comics like Archie and Richie Rich and, you know, whatever.
So what a blending there. So yeah. Here's the question you expect. When did you notice women in comics? How did comics become relevant to you?
Well, so even early on, now I started reading more, you know, huge numbers of paper comics actually during law school. So that was when I got into the more, I will buy each issue and I will own this collection and I am suddenly now an obsessed collector of things. But even early on, you know, with Jubilee and Rogue and Storm, the X-Men, yes, exactly, were a big influence on me. That cartoon was, I mean, certainly if you watched it now, you'd have a different perspective, but that cartoon was very influential.
Because you would see Storm normally. Aurora Monroe, Miss
yes.
Monroe, known as Storm, would mm-hmm. be in regular sight. She would have agency. She would have power. She would even lead the team.
Yes, yes. Although, you know, I mean, I think that they have done well sometimes in the movies portraying her as one of the leaders of the team, at least in the more recent movies. So thankfully there is that. I think she's always in the modern movie world looked on as one of the leaders, at least. But yeah, I mean, I looked at them and, you know, Rogue was particularly her own unique person in part because of her power, where she had to be apart from other people in a way. And Storm was very powerful. Jubilee was, you know, a crazy teen living in a mall.
You're alluding to something, and that is these women, though powerful and distinct in identity and character, were marginalized.
Mm-hmm.
To some degree, they had to either come of age and get some acceptance to get justice, so to speak.
Well, and I think Storm is a particularly interesting example of that, given her background. You know, she's growing up basically on the streets and has
because she's orphaned.
Because she's orphaned
in Cairo,
yes.
Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she's orphaned, and then if I'm remembering correctly,
she pickpockets Professor Xavier.
Yes, yeah, and the different continuities. Some people think she's a god because of her abilities, or a goddess, and they worship her. And then Professor Xavier is there, and she, you know, as you said, she pickpockets him, and they, you know, he realizes her power
as a street urchin.
As a street urchin, exactly.
A common character that reappears that we'll talk about later, but
yes. But I mean, I think it's interesting. You can look at it in many different ways. Professor Xavier, particularly, he is, you know, a white male protagonist, so he is one of the stereotypes in that way. But he is one who is accepting and encouraging of people's diversity, which I think is really valuable to have.
Let's kind of begin at the beginning. One of the ways I tried to research this, and we'll work our way back to contemporary characters like Storm, is, you know, I took a look at the history of comics, and, for those that are not familiar, you know, illustrations and illustrated stories, you know, started as early as the mid-1800s,
mm-hmm.
made their way from individual panels to strips, from strips to being add-ons into newspapers and, pulp magazines, not high literature, but things like spicy mystery stories and things like that. And eventually, as we move out of the 30s and into the 40s, and strangely enough, with World War II coming along, the form of comic books that some older people know, they've changed into graphic novels now, but the older newspaper pulpy, like 32-page book, that's what, you know, stayed with America for at least 3 to 4 decades later. And the characters that we often take for granted are expressed. Little Lulu is still an image, as along with Little Orphan Annie. Those two went from strips into comic book form.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said earlier, there were a number of women characters that even predated Superman or came around the same time. In 1937, for instance, there was Olga Mesmer, who this woman was half Venusian and half human, and she was super strong. But what was interesting is she made her appearance in spicy detective stories. And it was a distinct panel. So I think that gives me the occasion to say, what is your understanding now, given that first example in the early starts that I mentioned? It's a male-dominated industry. It's a white male-dominated industry. How has that changed over time? How should one perceive that going on in the comic book world?
I mean, I think that, first of all, there have always been women creating comics, and at some points in history, they have been recognized without some of the baggage that it comes with now. And then there was a point where in the, I want to say the around the 90s, really, where it changed a little bit.
And the head of Marvel Comics is now a woman, am I?
That's correct? Yes. As far as I'm aware, she's still the head of Marvel Comics, yes. I think that the dynamic of what people thought the audience was looking for, what people wanted to see, changed at some point, and then now has been crescendoing back towards, hey, we're all in this world, why are you trying to write stories just for this one demographic that isn't actually your primary readership anymore? Interestingly, going to the 90s and everything, we had Gail Simone, who started a website called Women in Refrigerators, and it was a study of what was done to the supporting female characters of male heroes. So the Titan-under fiance of the time, who was killed and stuffed in a refrigerator, as a dramatic point to make his development as a character more impactful. And Gail was examining what else had been done to these female characters in comics that marginalized them, as you said, and put them on the sidelines as just the emphasis or the spur for the male to do something. And what she did, which was really interesting, was engaged comics creators at that time, in what was going on, to see what other perspectives were. She was just saying, hey, this is something I've noticed. I'm not, she wasn't soapboxing at the beginning about what was going on. Here's what I think. She was saying, what do you think? And people came back with a bunch of different perspectives. You can still read it online. And even before that, I want to say in like 1985 or something like that, the Bechdel test, which was Alison Bechdel, It was the test of whether there were two women in the story who were talking about something other than a man. And if you didn't pass that test, then was this really a movie that portrayed reality and or was at all not about the male gaze? So, I think there have always been examinations of that, and those were a couple of the earlier modern examples that I can think of. But then going into the extreme modern today, we've got a lot of diverse women working in comics, as with the panelists tonight. And I think what's really key is that constantly we're examining, do these people that you're drawing on the page look too cheesecakey? Are they there for some purpose? Are you actually valuing the women in this comic or this creation? And are you valuing the women who are creating this comic and creation? I think we have made progress. I do also think there's a huge backlash by people who are perhaps threatened or scared about what's going on.
We've seen that show up, especially with the intersectionality of gender and race. Mm-hmm. A lot of protests for the forthcoming new Star Trek series.
Mm. That's with Sonequa Martin-Green.
Yeah. Michelle Yeoh is the commander.
Right.
She has able science officers that are African-American, and just the Twitter world and everywhere else is just blown up big time.
Well, I think what's so fascinating about that is Star Trek has always been about diversity. And so now I'm not a Star Trek expert, but I've seen it and I understand.
Oh, Gene Roddenberry attested to that was a clear agenda.
Certainly.
From the start.
Certainly. I'm familiar enough to know that he would have wanted to see diversity in his creation. And so the fans, and I quote, who are protesting this are not really fans of what he was trying to put out there. If they're saying, oh, we shouldn't have this, how could it be women? How could it be diverse women? How could it be African American or Asian women? This is not Star Trek. Of course it's Star Trek. What Gene Roddenberry was about was being diverse and bringing that out.
I want to first of all reiterate, listeners, that you're listening to Community Watch and Comment, the Wednesday edition. Our guest is Emily Witten. Ms. Witten is a columnist and reporter for ComicMix.com. She's been a program moderator for Awesome Con, which is a comic book, but also really media arts convention that meets every summer in Washington, D.C. You can find out more information about AwesomeCon, C-O-N, by going to awesome-con.com, because it's being held here in the city, down at the Convention Center, from June 16th to the 18th, this weekend. And tonight, Ms. Whitten is speaking at the National Museum of Women in the Arts. The panel is called Who Are the New Superwomen of the Universe? And that panel is very, very interesting. It includes historians, creator of comic books, graphic novel, forgive me, and a comic book store owner as well. And the National Museum of Women in the Arts is located at 1250 New York Avenue Northwest. Again, that panel's 7 p.m. tonight. Ms. Whitten, we're coming up toward our break, a short break point in our show. And I'm going to go ahead and do some public service announcements right after this.
The biggest Caribbean food festival returns to the DMV on Sunday, June 18th. The Grace Jamaican Jerk Festival, a day of food, family, culture, and fun. Enjoy the tastiest Caribbean foods, celebrity cook-off, culinary demonstrations, a kids zone, and more. Live entertainment by Taris Riley, Romaine Virgo, Queen Ifrika, Bungie Garlin, Fayan Lyons, Image Band, Ras Slick, and much more. The Grace Jamaican Jerk Festival, Sunday, June 18th. The festival grounds at RFK Lot 6, lawn at Oklahoma Avenue, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. For tickets and information, visit dcjerkfestival.com. Presented by the Institute for Caribbean Studies, celebrating June as Caribbean American Heritage Month. WPFW for jazz, justice, and all things Caribbean.
And welcome back to Community Watch and Comment, the Wednesday edition. I'm your host, David Whetstone. And as we started the past few weeks, I like to read some missing persons of color alerts that come from us from the Black and Missing Foundation. As reported June 7th in Norfolk, Virginia, many people are asking, where is Rashonda Gerald? That question her family has been asking the Norfolk Police Department since the 32-year-old mother of three has vanished on January 4th. As reported June 8th in D.C., people want to remind you that 22-year-old Marty McMillan Jr. remains missing. However, the vehicle that he was driving has been recovered. He was last seen April 23rd. There's a hashtag of Help Us Find Marty at D.C. Police Department. And lastly, on June 10th, reporting regarding Olney, Maryland, 33-year-old Olamide Michelle Frazier of the 3500 block of Bantry Way in Olney was last in contact with her family members in late May. She's been missing since. She's 5'4 in height and 160 pounds. Black and Missing Foundation is very responsible to reporting about missing people of color in the DMV area, but also nationally. Unfortunately, missing people have been reported about, or alerts have been issued regarding Atlanta, parts of Georgia, Colorado, California, Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, North Carolina, and Texas and Connecticut. They just recently had their fifth annual Hope Without Boundaries 5K run. It was a success. More than 1,200 people participated. So if you have further concerns about missing people of color, you can go to BAMFI, which is BAMFI.org, or call 877, that's a toll-free number, 97-BAMFI, 877-972-2634. So, Ms. Whitten, Emily, we're at our halfway point in the show, and we take listener calls. Callers, if you haven't called in the last 4 weeks, and you can make your comments within a minute to 2 minutes, you're welcome to call the studio here at 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. And instead of going to a question right now for you, Emily, we do have a caller, star And I'd like people to just, you know, tell us your first name and where you're calling from as you call in. Star, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I really don't. I saw Wonder Woman the other day, and I was I thought it was very, very disempowering. And I'm going to make my points as quickly as I can. I think that it was noted that the hero Diana, or heroine, whatever, Diana was raised in a society that was all women. And they're all women that are pretty much, whether you have a lot of military prowess and training, et cetera, et cetera. So this makes her an exception. That's been pointed out. But the where I don't think she represents for women's liberation is that there's no collective from that background that is painted in the movie. And by the end, she does have, and spoiler alert, she has a cohort of people who are going to help her, but they all happen to be men. The other thing is that in terms of her
Start,
strength...
Start, quickly. I know you were trying to be brief, but I'm going to...
Okay.
No. Listen. Allow this interruption. Since you made that comment, her initial presentation to the audience was with her community of women and elders. But and I don't condone really strong actions of violence, but she wasn't a battle with fellow women, and there was a sense of togetherness. I was just curious as
but not when she goes out into the world, and you only see that at the very beginning, and you see them being defeated by my male military powers, and by the end of the film, it's her alone on a mission for peace, and the only people who are her cohorts happen to be males. Also, she
who are very violent, by the way. Yes,
and she takes her cues from the main male characters. She, in fact, says, "Oh, thank you. You have kind of, you know, basically, you have led me. I didn't understand your perspective on peace and love, but now I do." So, a male has taken the lead. The other thing is that physically, the last scene when you see her with her male cohort, she happens to be exceptionally tall in that scene. And again, this is just not every woman being taller and having these kinds of strengths. Now, the real area where women have been able to challenge men, and I'm not saying that there haven't been gains made in athletic prowess and military training and skills like that, and kudos to women who do that. However, the real gains that women have made are in the intellectual arena, where they're achieving more and more in science and, you know, various public forums, that, you know, being lawyers and so on and so forth. Her strengths in the movie, I mean, she doesn't manifest any of that. It's pretty much, I've got a good heart, which is very traditional, and I've got all these great military skills, and I'm gorgeous. And it's just very
Our guest is reacting. Can I ask the favor of you? You're making some really cogent points here. We're both feeling wonderfully overwhelmed by them, as you've been a very astute observer of the film. Can you allow Emily Whitten to engage you thus far? Thank
Could
you.
Can I make one last point?
Okay, one last point.
Okay, I also think we need to see this in the context of a progressive critique of all of these action figures. Yeah, they theoretically represent every man who has all these magical powers, but the reality is it's considered in many progressive quarters from the 30s onward, there have been critiques that they're really fascist models that reduce the average person to watching the hero save them instead of activating them, you know, collectively through unions or whatever to achieve these goods their own. And so in a way, they're profoundly disempowering.
All right.
Star, there's a lot to unpack here, but I think, first of all, I'd like to start and say I don't disagree with at least, well, actually, a number of your points, but particularly, I did walk out of the movie and think one thing that did sit a little strangely with me was the way that she took some of her cues from Steve Trevor. The reason that I accept it in this story is because it was needed to tell this story. However, I wouldn't put forward that Wonder Woman is all women or is representative of all women. I would put forward
That's
that Again, when I walked out of the movie, a lot of people were saying, finally, a great movie with a female superheroine as the star. And I was saying that, but I was also saying, finally, DC finally made a good movie. They made a good movie, and it happened to also star a woman, which is amazing, because maybe we'll get more movies where people know that women can be the stars. And that will give us things like She-Hulk, who is a lawyer, or Oracle, who is disabled, or, well, in whatever continuity, depending what they choose, or others of the characters in comics on both the Marvel, DC, and other not, you know, not the big two side, who can represent other venues of women. So America Chavez, for instance, you know, she is a queer Latinx teen. So that's a completely different thing than Wonder Woman. I would never make the argument that Wonder Woman is all women or represents all women, or that women can only move forward in one venue, for instance, strength versus intellect. I would say that this is a good start and that it's a good Wonder Woman movie. So in other words, they didn't take Wonder Woman and grind her under their heel and say, this is a woman who only listens to men, et cetera, et cetera. She's constantly questioning. She's
which has happened in the book.
It has. It depending on who's writing and what era we're in, she's constantly questioning. She's constantly moving forward, and she's constantly saying, just because your world works this way doesn't mean I accept it. Now, I do say there are some points in the movie where she takes her cues from another person who, you know, is in this context of the historical, you know, World War One aspect, a man, and that doesn't always sit well with me either, but I wouldn't ever make an argument that this is the epitome of what all women are going to get to or anything like that.
Star, I'm gonna thank you very much, but I'm gonna apologize. We're gonna move on and take another call. Kathy, good morning.
Morning. Hi, is this David?
Yes, this is David.
Hi, yes. I'm waiting to
ask. Yeah, thank you for your patience.
You're welcome. I enjoy your show, and it's very timely.
Yeah. Well, I hope so.
It is, because I have a question about the...
Hey, go right ahead, please. I'm sorry.
Oh, you want me? Am I on?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, David. This is Kathy. Your program is very timely. I am calling, and I have two questions, or one question and a comment. I am an author, and I'm very interested in writing a comic book, and I've been told that my topic is very unique. I'd like to know if the panel discussion at the National Museum of Women in the Arts is open to the public.
Yes, it is. It's a specific event, and, okay, and there's a reception afterwards as well, by the way.
Oh, good.
So being a nonprofit, I can't give you the particulars, but you're welcome to call the National Museum of Women in the Arts.
Uh-huh.
The panel is called Who Are the New Superwomen of the Universe?
Okay.
And it's at 7 p.m. tonight.
Right.
The museum's located at 1250 New York Avenue Northwest.
Okay.
And I'm going to give listeners the phone number if they can't get to the internet.
Okay.
202-783-5000.
Okay. Also, can I make a comment?
Yes, go ahead. Quickly, though, please.
Okay. I have applied to work at the Awesome Comic Conference, and I think that I have been denied the opportunity, basically out of discrimination. The ad says that they want people who are young, energetic, and they want you to send a picture. Well, I have...
You know, I'm going to stop you, and having great respect for your concern, but we can't handle that and take several calls at the same time.
Okay, all right.
You obviously have had contact with Awesome Con.
Yes.
And I would just say I wish you well in prevailing and in participating.
Okay, well, I'm just going to go to this conference tonight because I'm interested in writing a comic book, and maybe I can make contacts there.
Okay, then.
Thank you
for calling.
Thank you, David. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, the two calls remind me of something, again, the theme that, you know, something that's in public in the public square, in the public space is still contested for women. And we've talked about really moving beyond the notion of mere participation or mere representation, that there's got to be some oomph, some subject to women being in the world of comics. And I just wanted to give you an opportunity to maybe reiterate that. I noticed that, again, there was a lot in the last two.
Yeah,
calls.
I mean, one of the biggest difficulties with talking about, I confess, as a woman who's into comics and is, you know, currently working on a comic, et cetera, I still have apprehension about voicing all of my opinions because I know someone's going to disagree and I know they're not always going to be wrong. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a learning, growing person all the time. And I think that one of the important things about this dialogue is to be people who will take the other perspective, listen to it, think about it, and really say, hey, we could go further in bringing diverse women into comics, or hey, we could look at another perspective that nobody's ever done before. I think that's important. And I don't think that a listener like, or a caller like Star is off the mark in saying, you know, we don't just want to stop here and this is not all women. But at the same time, I don't think it's harmful to say this is progress. This is something important and interesting to look at. You
would
know?
It be unfair to say that a younger audience, as you could tell, Star is very politically astute mm-hmm. and really puts a strong political analysis of things. And that's what we're about here. After all, we're a jazz and justice radio station. I think from what I can see as an old head, as they say on the street, is that people are expecting a lot from the representation of women in comics. They are expecting comics to be more than just entertainment. And again, the sad history, and you know, I had a whole bunch of notes decade by decade, characters by characters here for us, but I don't think that's the thing to do. But I'll talk by way of example of something I know that you're well experienced with. The whole phenomenon of cosplay mm-hmm. and costume play. Women are certainly in the majority on those scenes, but yet when you look at it outwardly, you look at these things and it's just freighted with gender politics.
I think cosplay is a really interesting angle. I am a cosplayer. I will go to cons and wear different costumes. Certainly, I have gotten varieties of levels of attention from everyone depending on what costume I am wearing. So if I am doing...
For good reasons and bad, unfortunately.
For good reasons and bad. So if I'm doing Arkham City Harley Quinn, which is a more, sensual out there character, I will get lots of attention from men and women, but men who are interested in this depiction of this character who sometimes, you know, they're seeing me, but they're also seeing just the character. Or if I'm doing Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica, who is a tougher woman who's not wearing that kind of clothing, I will get more of the hardcore Battlestar fans who are like, oh, that's a great costume. At one point, I did a crossover where I was a Deadpool who was wearing a Jake the Dog costume on top of that, and I was doing it with someone who was a Spider-Man yeah. wearing a Finn costume. That got one of the biggest reactions because it was ridiculous and funny. So cosplay is interesting in that sense. You can be a totally different person and get totally different reactions than your normal life just by changing what you're looking like. And that, of course, applies to real life as well. People judge you or react to you based on what you look like. That goes into the whole, you know, diversity thing. But certainly, cosplay also has the aspect of people forgetting that you're a person inside the costume. And since there are a lot of women who do it, and a lot of women who do it are cosplaying superheroines, and a lot of those superheroines, because of their development over the years and not necessarily in modern times when we're more cognizant of this, are wearing more revealing costumes. There's both that aspect of it and the aspect of people not behaving appropriately towards them because of the way they're dressed. This was a few years ago now, but there was an instance where a bunch of Lara Croft cosplayers got together at a con for a photo shoot organized by the game designer, if I remember correctly. And one of them was like 14 years old or something. And a member of the comics press, unfortunately, asked some very inappropriate questions towards a 14-year-old because he wasn't thinking, this is a 14-year-old girl. He was thinking, this is Lara Croft. You know, she wears a crop top and little shorts and whatever else is in people's minds when they look at her. It's very unfortunate that people forget how to behave like people who respect each other just because you're wearing a costume that they associate with something else. At some point I wrote, you know, how to behave at a con with cosplayers, you know, like what to do and what not to do. And I got a comment that was like, well, I'm, you know, an older person and rules were different back then. How am I supposed to know what to do? And I'm like, I just told you what to do. Listen to me. Listen to what I'm saying. Don't touch people without asking. Don't take pictures without asking, if they're, especially if they're younger people, or just generally, you know, don't do anything they didn't do. So if you say, hey, can I get a picture? And they put an arm on you, that's okay. But if they don't, it's not okay. You know, like, it's basic stuff. And yet people forget because they're standing next to someone who portrays Starfire instead of someone who's a person who characterized as that person at that con, you know, as that character at the con.
You know, I just feel a sense of shame as a man because this kind of constant projection, mansplaining, and re-justifications, false, that go on. And, you know, it's just been with the history of comics. And I wanted to offer some touch points for people as far as diversity and inclusion. In 1937, the national newspaper record for black communities, the Pittsburgh Courier, had journalist Jackie Armes create a character named Torchy Brown, who was a girl from the South who winds up in New York City and goes through some of the things we just talked about with the cosplay people. But what was unique about this, again, was that Torchy Brown, the character, not only addressed racial and attacks and potential sexual assaults, but environmental pollution. So she was an early environmental justice person. In 1941, Miss Fury was the first female created superheroine in America. And creator, Tarpe Mills, I got Miss Mills' name correct, took this woman from being a socialite to a fierce crime fighter that showed all sorts of displays of science and grit and what have you. So, you know, that force has been there. Now, at the Awesome Con this weekend, one of the major guests is Stan Lee. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people forget that Stan Lee was the writer of also romance comics as well. Ergo, if you look at Spider-Man, for instance, and you look at the vicissitudes of his concerns about family and dating life, you know, Stan Lee, his kind of pre-training before he was unleashed with his masterful powers, even at age 90, you know, comes from that background. So there's this odd sort of give and play, this odd sort of valence with what goes on. And I hope tonight your panel at the National Museum of Women in the Arts, again at 7 o'clock, who are the new superwomen of the universe, really tackles this and other issues as well. Listeners, I want to remind you that you're listening to Community Watch and Comment, the Wednesday edition. I'm your host, David Whetstone. Emily Witten and I have been talking about superwomen, superwomen who assemble both in the world of comics, graphic novels, and movies, and what their representation means in this world of media. The number to reach us at, there's still some time, is 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. I also want to remind you that throughout the day, there's a number of progressive programs here on WPFW. At 3 o'clock, we start with 2 hours of music by women, but for everyone, with Sophie's Parlor. At 2, Shai Wanana, that covers Middle Eastern affairs with Zain El Amin, is on the air. And at 1, my good friend and colleague, Muiza Mutali, along with producer James Pope, brings you Africa Now. Those matters that are of concern to people of African descent at 1. And then last but not least, don't forget the blues with Steve Hoffman. That includes the blues calendar. You know, Africa Now, this afternoon is going to look at art as well. They're looking at human resistance through art and culture with Dr. Sion Neely. Dr. Neely is going to talk about an annual cultural festival that's in Accra, Ghana. Miss Witten, I want to really thank you for being here. In no way have we exhausted the number of topics that we can cover.
Oh, certainly.
And I would think that, you know, the one caller we had about women breaking into comics made me think, what's your vantage point? You report on it regularly. You're not solely dedicated to comics. If it's people look at your comicmix.com, they'll find reports on Nickelodeon, on I'm just trying to think of the things you've been covering in the last month. A lot of things, not fashion, politics, but all related to the to this world that we're talking about this
morning. Yeah, and I think it's really easy if you're a fan of this stuff to get enmeshed in it and to lose a little of the perspective that someone might bring to it from the outside. And again, I would like to go back to Star's points because I don't disagree with everything she was saying or even a lot of it. I think comics has to catch up a lot with things and the general pop culture that surrounds these kinds of media, sci-fi, fantasy, paranormal, all of the things that are the imagination in that sense, have some tropes that need to be...
Do you think the double signaling will ever stop? You know, kind of, here's a heroic or she-heroic woman, but, you know, and showing her full humanity, especially the male narrator or creator, creeps in, and somehow it's not quite there.
I mean, I think the more people think about this as they create, and the more people we have who are diverse, who are creators, and the more people we encourage to be able to create, in other words, this isn't closed to you, the greater breadth of writing and creating and art that we will get in this venue and genre. I cover everything from, you know, voice actors to fashion to comics to movies to everything like that, but it all centers around these products that they're not products per se, these creations, but they then make products that we can consume that are about imagination. And I attended the Nebula Awards a few years ago about science fiction awards, and there was an astronaut who was a keynote speaker, and he said, "We love science fiction writers because you write it and then we try to make it happen." So the more people writing in these venues, in these genres that are diverse and are expressing their thoughts and views and thinking about it as they create, the more it may be able to happen in the real world.
All right. And I thank you for being with us in this hour. No way are these things exhausted. And I would remind listeners that there are two opportunities to really investigate this fully. One is tonight at 7 at the National Museum of Women in the Arts. Ms. Wooden is moderating a panel of four, and my apologies for not doing justice and really lifting up their particulars, but the panel is called "Who Are the New Superwomen of the Universe?" It's part of the museum series Fresh Talk, again at 7. The National Museum of Women in the Arts is at 1250 New York Avenue Northwest, not too far from the metro. And this weekend, Awesome Con is here June 16th through 18th at the Convention Center. My thanks to the News and Public Affairs Department, Jamila Mahdi, our able administrator. She really holds down everything around here. Mike Nasella, our engineer, and the News and Public Affairs Departments of WPFW. Coming up next will be Askia Mohammed with the news after our outro. And of course, make it a great day for you and for others. Thank you.